Live from Blog Talk Radio, Mystical Empress Life Coaching with your host, Brenda Renee.
Good afternoon, everybody. How was the week? How was Easter? Pretty exciting time of the year. Lots of new growth happening. And I just want to let you guys know, I'm sitting here looking at my little write-up about this show. I might have been just a wee bit overly ambitious on what we're going to get accomplished today, but I will give it my best shot because astrology is, I would say, my top passion when it comes to metaphysics. This was the very first thing I started with when I started learning about all of these things, and I wanted to share, I would say, probably a thumbnail sketch of the depth of astrology today. I was very fortunate. I had about five or six folks message on our Facebook pages, Mystical Empress, and let me have their date of birth, their birth data. To do an astrology chart, you have to have somebody's time, date, and location of birth. And the time of birth is crucial because the entire chart is set up on that exact time. And so I put a little request out on the page a few days ago, and I got some takers. So we're going to have some actual people's charts to reflect on today, and I can weave that into what we're going to be talking about. So most everybody in this culture, at least, knows what astrology is. I would say it's probably worldwide most people know what astrology is. But there's many different types of astrology. There's Western, there's Vedic, there's Chinese. I practice Western. We're actually going to be bringing in a Chinese astrology practitioner in another month or so into Mystical Empress. But I do Western astrology. I use it because it is a tool that helps me get to the crux of the matter with a lot of people. When I start working with them with the shamanism, the theta healing, life coaching, I get their chart done first because it is such a quick way to see what's going on with somebody, why they're here, what their aspirations are, what's their soul's path, what's their blocks. I can look at that and it gives me so much information that could take hours upon hours of discovery. So today I want to share a little bit of that. But most people, when they think of astrology, they think of sun signs. And then several years ago we had this big upset where they were saying all the constellations and everything had shifted places and we were all now a different sun sign. Well, I got to tell you, I was born a Scorpio and I will die a Scorpio. And there's no way around that. No matter what kind of shifting they say has happened, I'll be a Scorpio through and through. So let's look at this science. This is, you know, astrology was really revered centuries, eons ago. The wisest people studied the stars. And it's not that the planets make you do something. It gets back to that inner relationship. We live in this energetic universe, and like attracts like. And the moment you took your first breath on this planet, the stars were in certain positions. And that energetic relationship set up a lot of patterns in your life and gave a lot of indication of, you know, your natural talents and obstacles. So astrology goes way beyond your sun sign, which is determined by your day and year of birth, month. So we have 10 planets we look at. There's asteroids that we also look at. And then there's the wheel. Now, I tried to give you guys a picture of an astrology chart. If you're looking at the website, you can see the picture. But I'll do my best, because I'm a teacher through and through, I'll do my best to explain to you everything in the simplest terms. With or without a picture, you'll understand what I'm saying. Because a lot of my charts I do over the phone, so I have to be adept at explaining things. All right, so the astrology chart is a pie graph divided into 12 sections. And each pie slice in this circle represents a different life focal point. Like we have money, we have career, we have marriage, we have children, and on and on. And funny enough, I was just doing I was feng shuiing a house last week in Aurora, and I was talking about astrology to him while we were looking at the Bagua map, which is a square shape divided into 9 smaller squares. And I look at both of these graphs very similarly. With feng shui, the 9 little squares are life areas. With astrology, the 12 pie slices are life areas. And so when we cast one of these charts, it's very mathematical in the calculations. And I've been doing this my whole life. I can't do the math of it. I have to rely on a computer to calculate the math. But it involves longitude, latitude, minutes, seconds, degrees, and it can get very complicated. And so I use the computer to calculate the wheel for me, and then I dive into it and interpret it. So anyway, you take this person's birth date, their year of birth, their location, and you cast this chart. And no two charts are the same. They're all unique as your fingerprints. And as many years as I've been doing this, I still am fascinated by the configurations that show up on these charts. So we have these 12 houses, then we've got 10 planets that are found within those houses. Some people have all their planets in one or two houses. Some people have them scattered throughout the chart. We actually have a gentleman's chart today, David. His planets are scattered through 8 of the 12 pie slices. So it just depends, you know, where your focal point is in this lifetime. People say, well, what does it mean if I don't have anything in a particular pie slice or house? And I say that just means that you pretty much felt like you had that under control in this lifetime. You wanted to put your energy, drive, and focus in other more crucial areas of your life. So we've got all of that going on. And then, and we're not going to get into this today because it would get a little too intense, but the planets have communications with each other called aspects. And as these planets are in harmonious dialogue, you have a flow of energy in that area of your life. Things seem to come easier. When the planets have discordant communication or aspects, that's where we see the blockages. And we're like, damn, why do I keep hitting the same wall? It's because you've got blocked energy. Now, you can look at this, like I said, and tell really quickly where your hangups are going to be and where that needs to be smoothed. None of this is destiny, though. I do not do anything, whether it's psychic readings, whether it's astrology. I don't care what the tool I'm using. I don't see anything as destiny. That would totally blow law of attraction, quantum physics out of the water if you had no choice, if you couldn't rearrange energy flow. But it's good to be able to know where your energy is blocked so that you know where to go to shift it out. And I want to say this too. astrology, after the moment of birth, the chart continues to evolve every day, every year of your life. And you can look at charts to see what upcoming cycles are coming up. And these are called transits and progressions. And then we have the solar return charts that are cast every year on your birthday. But I don't lean so much on the predictive end of astrology. I use it more as a psychological analysis, a personality profile, because I know in my own life, when I have lived my life by cycles, you know, the more refined cycles, like this is what's going to happen this month, this is what's going to happen this day, I go crazy. I get really obsessive, compulsive about it, and that's not a good thing for me. And it takes me off my soul path. My soul path is to be here and trust the flow of the universe and connection with source. So when I get caught up in too many details, it bogs me down and keeps me from moving forward. So I don't use astrology so much to predict people's lives. With that said, there's also branches of astrology that I do use, which are somewhat predictive, electional astrology charts. I definitely believe that every event, that every business, that every important thing that happens, weddings, can be charted astrologically to pick the best date and time to begin the new venture. And so I do electional astrology charts for businesses, for weddings, for things like that, because I want to help people get off to the most successful start. And if you pick a chart or date and time that's not auspicious, then you're going to have constant obstacles to negotiate along that path. My husband and I got married on winter solstice 2015, and I spent several months picking. I had no perimeters. It was any date in the world I wanted to choose, and that made it a little bit more difficult. Usually when a client calls, they have a 2 or 3 month window they want to get something happening. But anyway, I combined for the wedding, I combined the moon phases, I combined even superstitions, days of the week and months of the year. I made up the perfect electional chart. And honestly, the electional charts are more complicated than the natal charts, but you can read, you can go to the website, mysticalempress.com. I have the blog of the wedding chart on there. If you'd like to just peek at that, the same things apply to businesses. I had a man call me this week. He wants to start a business, and we talked about doing an electional chart. I had a girl call 2 days ago wanting to pick the perfect date for her wedding. So these things can be mapped out. All right, let's get on to our astrology charts. Okay, so the sun is our ego. It's our ego drive. So you say, well, I'm a Scorpio or I'm a Pisces or whatever. And most people know what that means. It's rare for me to find somebody that doesn't know anything about their sun sign. That is the most readily available information. But when someone first meets you, and they don't know you yet, they don't see your sun sign. They see your rising sign or ascendant sign. This is where the exact moment of birth comes in and why it's so important. So a wheel, we've got this circular wheel or pie graph, and it's divided into 12 sectors. The very first pie slice defines your ascendant sign. And like I said, that's determined by your time of birth. We've got, I have like a stack of, I think, five or six charts on the table here. And we've got a Virgo rising, Leo rising, Libra, two Libra risings. Actually, two Virgo risings, two Libra risings, and one Leo. So that's four charts. The ascendant or rising sign is the mask that you wear. It tells me what tools you decided you needed to use to survive in your family, to survive in the environment that you were born into. And it also gives me an idea of what that environment was like. And the ascendant sign can be revealing as far as your physical characteristics, your appearance, how you appear to the world. It shows the lens that you view the world through. It's like your filter. And it can give some indications on health too. So this first sign, the ascendant, with a Virgo ascendant, and that would be Crystal and Chris, two Chris's basically. Virgo risings come in and their filter is to fix problems. They're looking around. They are perfectionist. They are able to determine where obstacles are at, what needs to be done to fix them. They are quite capable people. You can count on them. Now, and the family probably counts on them. The problem with Virgo rising, though, because they're so perfectionistic, they can be very, very hard on themselves because they have such high standards. And I respect that. But they have to be careful to not put too much pressure on themselves, because when the Virgo rising gets stressed, it goes right to their digestive system and it makes them sick, makes their tummy hurt. So if you want somebody in a position where you're hiring somebody, or you're hiring somebody to work for you, or you're hiring a professional to answer, you know, help you with problems, you can't do any better than Virgo. When I'm looking for a doctor, I always try to get someone with a Virgo sun rising or moon sign. We'll get into the moon in a second, because I know these people are going to leave no stone unturned in diagnosing and figuring out what's going on with me. So I have a lot of respect for Virgos. Okay, so we've got Virgo rising here, and we got Libra rising. We got two Libra risings on the table. Libra is the sign of partnerships and harmony. And when a Libra moon, sun, or rising comes into a family, they come in to bring peace and be mediators. And it puts them in a very tenuous situation, because they're trying to, you know, bring harmony out of warring factions a lot of times. The Libra, for them to feel their happiness, they have to be in a peaceful, calm environment and relationship. So because of their own physical and emotional needs for harmony, they will go out of their way to get other people to harmonize. And the Libra rising is often marks someone that's very attractive, someone that's easy on the eyes, as they would say. It also indicates a great talent for artistic, creative ventures. These people, you know how the Virgo can look at something and see where the problems are. The Libras look at things and they know instantly how to bring beauty out of chaos, and how to bring that into environments, how to bring that into relationships. And if they're not doing it just, you know, vocally or physically, they may be creating works of art that bring that to people and to the space. And also, with that Libra need for partnerships, you seldom find Libra single very long, because part of their identity is caught up in their partnership. So the Libra comes in to harmonize the environment and the family. Now, I'm going to go on to I got a Leo rising here. I want to cover that. And then I want to modify what I just said to you. So the Leo rising, they come in and they're like, let's get the party started. This place is too stuffy. We need to line it up a little bit. And so the Leo comes in to be in the spotlight, to garner attention, to entertain. A lot of Leo rising, Leo sun children, even Leo moons, they come in and the family gets to watch them. They're like their entertainment section. You know, they just sit and watch the Leos doing gymnastics or dancing or singing or whatever. But they're highly entertaining. And they're also leaders, leadership signs. So they come in, they lighten the mood in the family, and they give them a new place to express themselves, because that's what Leos do. It's very much about helping others to fully express their creativity and their own uniqueness. And so the Leo is courageous, and they just do it. Okay, so now those are some of the rising signs that I'm looking at. And it can go in and there's many other signs that we could look at. But I wanted to just kind of give you an idea of how this influences your personality. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're a very easygoing Taurus, and I have one of those here, Crystal. And then you have this Leo rising. Oh, wow, man. I'm being kind of pulled in two directions. The Taurus isn't so concerned with the spotlight, but man, Leo needs it. So these factors do alter your sun sign. If you've ever read about your sun sign, said, man, that doesn't fit me at all. It could be these other factors going on. And the other thing I wanted to bring in, a few of these charts I have, Ginger, she has Neptune in the first house, the ascendant house. And then we've got Chris with Pluto in that house. And Gagan, I don't know if I'm saying your name right, honey. I hope I'm not butchering it. But Gagan has Pluto in the first house also. So with Pluto in that first house, that alters things dramatically. So when you have that situation, Pluto, Scorpio's planet, every sign, every astrology sign has its ruling planet, and the planet gives further emphasis to why a sign is the way it is. Well, Pluto is the sign of transformation and intensity. Whenever I see a person with Pluto in the first house, it tells me that they are also, in addition to the rising sign, they're playing the role of Phoenix in this lifetime. Phoenix, as well as they have an option. Scorpio's got three symbols: Scorpion, Eagle, and Phoenix. The Scorpion's the level of wanting to get it revenge and even and kind of nasty. The Phoenix is I'm going to require life to give me as many changes and major transformations as possible. And that's going to help me continuously be reborn in this lifetime. And that's what I always get from the Pluto in the first house. So that's a modifier. Ginger had Neptune in the first house. Well, Neptune is the planet of Pisces. And so it's very idealistic. It's very soft energy that wants everything to be beautiful and peaceful and no strife, no disharmony whatsoever. And Ginger in particular, with that Libra rising and then the Neptune in the first house, makes her, she's got a very sensitive filter and mask that she wears in facing the world. It also makes you, makes one very psychic, so sensitive, like a psychic sponge, picking up on everything. And that's part of the reason why they want everything to be calm and harmonious, because it can really wear on the system. Okay, so let's move on to the moon sign. Now, the moon is your emotions. It's your sensitivity. It's how you can process things emotionally in the world. It's also your subconscious. It's your habits and patterns. And it also reveals your mother and your relationship to her, as well as how you were nurtured and how you go on to nurture others as well as yourself. The moon represents female and mother, and the sun represents your father and the masculine qualities. We all have an inner female and inner male. And so these are those two archetypes in our personalities. Now, with the moon, some of these moon signs are not real sensitive and touchy-feely. Some of them are overly so. Just depends on which moon sign you have. You could be somebody that, let's say you could be an Aquarius air sign, maybe, I don't know, Gemini rising, and then have a Cancer moon. And that Cancer moon is so sensitive and emotional that it can almost feel like you're drowning in emotions at times when your other two signs are very detached and airy. So factors really come together in defining an individual. Now, I still play the sun sign game. When I meet somebody, I'll listen to them, and I can listen to them and watch them, watch their body language, watch how they express themselves. And 99% of the time, I can nail either their sun, moon, or rising sign. I was in this class about a week ago, and there was this girl in the class, and I was watching her. Well, it was kind of hard not to watch her because she had a very dramatic flair about her. And I kept watching her and listening to her, and I thought, okay, there's Leo in there, and there's Gemini in there. And finally, I went up and I asked her, I said, so what is your sun sign? She said, I'm a Virgo. I said, well, where's the Leo and Gemini in your chart? She said, I have a Leo moon and Gemini rising. It's very obvious when you know what you're looking for. Okay. And that Leo and Gemini presence completely overshadowed the Virgo side of her. All right. Let me get back to where I was talking about. Okay, so the moon. So we've got two people here on the table that are new moon babies, which means their sun and their moons were the same. So when you have that happen, the inner masculine and feminine are working in harmony together. So there's not a push and pull going on here as there would be with a full moon baby. The full moon is somebody that's sun and moon are exactly opposite. So their entire lives, they're trying to find a balance. The new moon, and just as it would sound, these people are coming in for a fresh start. They're wanting a new path this lifetime. And astrology definitely focuses on more than one lifetime. So reincarnation is very much part of the story with astrology. So Ginger is a double Aries, and Gagan is a double Pisces. And so funny here is with Ginger, she's got this strong Aries energy that is working in opposition to that sensitive Libra and Neptune influence. So she's really doing a balancing act in her life because Aries and Libra are exact opposites. And Mr. Gagan, with his sun and his moon, both in Pisces, he's also a Libra rising, as she was. So that all kind of flows for him, because while Libra and Pisces are not the same energy, they both have common similar goals. Now, his Pluto in the first house might shake up the nest every now and then, because that Pluto wants an intense, invigorating life experience. It's not satisfied with the status quo. All right, let's see who else. Oh, and let me say this. The moon in Aries, it's not real comfortable here because the moon is sensitive. It's emotional. It's vulnerable. Aries is anything but. Aries is the warrior energy, the independent energy, the tough energy. So with the moon in Aries, when we suffer an emotional blow, when someone hurts our feelings, anger is usually the first emotion that comes up, because that's the natural response in an Aries. When they get upset, anger's the first thing that happens. So when an Aries gets their feelings hurt, at first they're going to get really mad. But then as they calm down, then the tears may come. The mother, as represented by an Aries moon, the mother figure in this person's life, tends to be very independent, could even be very alpha. But the soft, nurturing, homemaker, traditional kind of motherly archetype is not in their wiring. These are the warrior princesses that, you know, put the kid on the back of them and take off to unknown ventures. And it makes the child very strong in themselves, but also very fearful of emotional undercurrents and getting swept away by that vulnerability. The Pisces moon has a very emotional, sensitive, even psychic energy that they put out, and they receive things. They're very, very in tune with people emotionally. The sun sign is one, but a Pisces sun and moon makes our friend Gagan very, very sensitive emotionally. And it's very important, and I'll say this for anybody with anything Pisces. I'm Pisces rising well, and I was an empath my whole life, you know, and no one around me knew anything about psychic stuff or energy or anything, and I suffered a lot in my childhood because I was so sensitive to what everybody was thinking, everybody was feeling, and all the environmental stuff around me. And I had a very, very tumultuous childhood, so I was picking up on all the adult junk along with having to process my own emotions. So anybody with Pisces anything, it's very important for you to learn about psychic phenomenon, to learn about energy, to learn about being empathic, because the more you know and understand about it, the better you can navigate this world. So one with a Pisces moon generally has a symbiotic relationship with mother. Mother may be very spiritual. She may be very, very sensitive because she's psychic herself. And she could have a lot of issues with health and imbalances of the body, just because part of it's because she's so sensitive and she doesn't know how to manage that sensitivity. So the Pisces moon comes in, they're very sensitive to their mother, and then they move out into the world and they're very, very sensitive to their emotional connections. Also very artistic. See who else we have here. So now David, his chart was interesting because it's very fiery. He had his sun in Aries, his rising in Leo, and his moon in Sagittarius. Lots of fiery energy. And fire, we all need activity, physical activity to be healthy. But fire, man, they need a lot of physical activity because that fire has to go somewhere. And if you live a sedentary life and you've got that much fire, eventually it's going to wear on your health, on your body. So the more activity these folks can get, the better off they are. With Sagittarius moon, this is a very light energy for the moon. It's not so touchy-feely, but it's not heavy either. The Sagittarius moon is the adventurer. It's the person who's like, what do they say? Rock that gathers no moss, I can't remember the thing. You know what I'm talking about. This guy is somebody who needs to be on the move. He needs to be exploring territory, exploring philosophies, exploring ideas and beliefs and, you know, education. He wants to gather as much information as he can. And a lot of Sagittarius moons find it very difficult to settle down and marry. Now, I happen to know David's married, and I think he's married to a Sagittarius female, which is pretty cool. And we're going to talk about that too. But the Sagittarius moon, the mother encouraged the child to grow, to learn, to expand. It wasn't a position of, oh, you're my baby, you got to stay close to me. It's, here's your wings. Show me what you can do with them. Fly. Explore. Bring back messages to me. Let me know what you've learned. I'd like to hear. What I was saying about David's wife being a Sagittarius, she carries a real strong Capricorn energy, but she is a Sagittarian. The moon in a man's chart is very powerful in showing what kind of woman he's attracted to. There's other factors, but in a man's chart, the moon is very indicative. So with the Sagittarius moon for a man, he's going to be attractive to outdoorsy, adventurous, maybe even athletic females. This is a very, the Sagittarius moon can make one very blunt, very intelligent, but also very blunt. When they know something, they know it, and they're going to tell you, and they're not going to sugarcoat it. Donald Trump has a Sagittarius moon, and it can get you in trouble. They call it foot and mouth disease when you don't quite filter what you say. Now, I personally appreciate anybody that's direct with me. I like direct in my interactions, but some people are real sensitive, and it's hard for them to handle direct. Okay, let's see who else we got here. Now, Crystal has a Gemini moon. So the Gemini moon, this is a moon sign that's really not comfortable with emotional displays. I'd rather bypass that. The mom here liked to talk to intellectualize anything that was emotional or heavy. Just talk it out. And this teaches the child to be very comfortable and secure in the world of ideas, rational thought, and gathering information. So this moon sign is very agile mentally. And Crystal's also Virgo rising, so that doubles that mercurial quality about her. And when we say mercurial, we mean that you're very flexible, very mutable. You can change on a dime. And with the Gemini moon, comfort will come and nurturing will come when she's communicating maybe with her friends, talking, or learning about something new. Communications are very highlighted here. And what else? Do we have anybody else? Chris has a Capricorn moon, as do I. This isn't a real easy place for a moon sign, but especially he and I both are Scorpios, and with Capricorn moon, that adds to the intensity and the achievement factor. With Capricorn moon, Capricorn is very conscious of achievement, very conscious of goals that they set and achieving those goals and moving up in the world. Business, career is an important factor. It's a very dutiful sign for the emotions here are not allowed to just go free range. They're very controlled because this person has a lot to get accomplished and they try to be very disciplined and responsible. And so this was the underlying message the mother gave to the child. This mother wasn't one so much worried about keeping you as a child, but as, okay, I'm overseeing the development of this human being. I need to provide this child with the tools that they can survive as an adult. It's a very practical placement. And it can be a little troublesome because Capricorn moon places so much responsibility on the person from an early age that it's hard for them to let down their hair and just kind of relax. But on the positive side, it does get things done. Now, all of these signs and planets have their high end, which would be, I'd say, positive, and their lower, less evolved end, which is negative. So no sign is fully wonderful and no sign is fully awful. But depending on which end of the scale the person wants to work with is what you'll see. Let me give you an example. Adolf Hitler was a Taurus with a Capricorn moon. And so the Taurus is generally very easygoing. Now, they can get really mad if you push them far enough, but they're generally very easygoing. The Capricorn at its best does what's right, doesn't play games and cut corners and, you know, stuff like that. But it can also, in its negative, be very ruthless. Okay? All right. So we've covered our moons. We've covered our ascendants. And the sun, I don't really care to talk that much about the sun because, like I said, I feel pretty confident that anybody listening to this already knows about their sun sign. And I get to talking so loud or so long, both. I forget to tell you guys, if anybody wants to ask a question, you can call in 515-602-9648 and press 1 to let me know you have a question. Okay, so let's look at, I'm going to look at these charts and just kind of give you some highlights that can be seen. So we said we had 10 planets, right? Well, when a house has 4 or more planets, or a sign has 4 or more planets, this is called a stellium. And this shows a marked degree of strength and capability either in the house or in that sign. Ginger's chart actually has a stellium in the 7th house of marriage partnerships. So with that conglomeration of planets, she has Mercury, Mars, Moon, and Sun in the 7th house, okay? Now, each house also has its natural ruler, just like each planet goes with a astrology sign, each house also does. The 7th house is Libra's house, okay? Ginger has all these planets, and they're almost all of them are Aries, which is funny, in the 7th house of Libra. She has a Libra ascendant. And so she, in this lifetime, number one, she's really learning how to harmonize the Aries-Libra dynamic. They're two sides of the same coin. And so she's got all this stuff going on in the seventh house, partnerships, friendships. And I'm not talking about acquaintances. I'm talking about really close friendships, marriage, business partners. These areas are under the microscope for her. Now, she has natural talents in that area. That's what all this energy is about. But she also wants to learn more. And that's very interesting, the way that falls into line, considering it's the Aries-Libra axis and she's a double Aries. When you have planets, the seventh house is the marriage house. The fifth house is your lovers, your children, your lovers, and your artistic expression. So she doesn't have anything in the fifth house, which was the romance, but she's got a lot in the seventh house. These planets that fall here modify what she's looking for in a mate. She has Mercury there. She's looking for somebody she can talk to. She has the sun there. She's looking for someone that's like a leader that she can respect and look up to. The moon is there. So if she doesn't find the sensitivity, which I doubt she would with a sun seventh house, the moon seventh house is where she comes in. So it's almost like they get to play the roles of the father is the male, the mother's the female. And all that implies, she's bringing the sensitivity to the relationship while he's bringing the strong masculine energy to it. And that's doubled because she has Mars there too. And Mars is a masculine planet. It's funny, there's several people here. Ginger has Mars in the seventh. Gagan has Mars in the seventh. David has Mars in the seventh. So three of the five people here have Mars in the seventh. Now, Mars in the seventh, wherever Mars lands in a chart, shows where you spend a lot of energy, where you really devote yourself. And with Mars in the seventh house, it means that these folks really are driven to have marriage as well as possibly business partnerships. But Mars is independence, it's leadership, it's courage, and it's also aggression. With Mars in the seventh house, it's guaranteed that you're probably not going to have this peaceful, non-eventful relationship. You've watched these movies where you've got the couples and they might be hollering or throwing plates or something, and you think, oh my gosh, that's so dramatic. But with Mars in the seventh house, that really gets these folks' juices flowing. They're like amped up and feeling passion from the drama of it. Okay. Now, it can be alleviated if the Mars energy is used more in like, oh, and also it could be very competitive between the partners. But if we use the Mars in a more positive realm for marriage, it could be participating in sports together or, you know, doing daring or athletic or challenging things together. So that way the energy is expressed in a direction where it's not pulling the two of you apart. You're harmonizing together to achieve a goal. Okay. Crystal has Venus and Jupiter in the seventh house. Wherever Venus falls in a chart shows what you really love. Now, Crystal isn't married right now, but the Venus lets me know that marriage would be a very harmonious thing for her. She also has Jupiter there. And with Jupiter in the seventh house, I happen to have that placement myself as well as my husband. you have got to find a partner that you can share similar dreams and goals together. This is not someone that would be happy with a marriage partner where you both go off in different directions and you have like two separate lives. These people need to feel like they're working together as a team towards a common goal or interest. And it can often indicate business partnerships within the marriage, which is exactly what's happened with my husband and I. Okay, now let me go back. David has his, we're going to move on to your soul path now, which is the north node. And in the chart, it looks like a pair of, looks like a headphone set. Now, David has his north node in the seventh house of marriage. With the north node there, the north node always indicates what you came to learn in this lifetime. And it also indicates where natural ease, luck, and flow are in your life. However, the exact opposite of the north node is the south node. And it falls in the house exactly opposite the seventh, which would be his first house. This shows what you have mastered to the zenith in past lives. It shows your natural inclinations. But this lifetime, you said, okay, I know how to do all that really well. This time, I want to do it totally different. So for him, his natural inclination is towards independence, going it alone, fighting the good fight, and being courageous and willing to leap ahead into unknown chartered territories. The north node in the seventh house is, wait a minute, you got to now consider a partner. You can't make choices all on your own anymore. You've got to consider the fact that you're part of a relationship now. So that alters the whole game plan. Someone with the north node in the seventh house, their biggest challenge is learning how to share and check in with their significant other, marriage partner, or business partner even. But it's about now learning how to harmonize perhaps different personalities, different belief systems, and finding common ground. Chris's north node, oh, I want to talk about this too. I had made a note of this. Chris has three planets plus his north node in the second house. The second house is the money house. And so he's got his Mercury there, his Sun there, his Uranus there, and his north node. Now, his Sun is Scorpio, his Mercury Scorpio, his Uranus is Scorpio. In the second house, this indicates how you make money, it indicates what you value, and it's the natural home to Taurus, which is the builder of the zodiac, builder of wealth, builder of business, family, anything, homes. So with his north node in the second house, this tells me, number one, this is a soulmate lifetime for him. Number two, his south node would be the exact opposite, which is the eighth house or Scorpio house. And this tells me in his past lives, he depended on others to sustain him. This would be a common placement for someone who was, could possibly be even a slave. I've never had that idea. It just came to me. But somebody, I hate to say this to you, Chris, but it could be someone like a prostitute or a concubine, somebody that's being taken care of by someone else. They're not having to necessarily hold their own. They've got a benefactor. That's what I was looking for, a benefactor. But with this placement that he has now, he's like, you know what? I'm not going to be dependent on anybody else. It's going to be all about me and what I can manifest on my own. Past lives for him would have been very chaotic, tumultuous, because of that heavy Scorpio influence, a lot of chaos and crisis. And in this lifetime, he's meant to have a much more peaceful existence. And with this north node in the second house, wealth is very, very available to him. This is where ease comes in his life. And as long as he's not counting on somebody else to make it happen for him, he stands in really good stead of building something really, really impressive. With all these planets in the second house, they give an indication of how he can make money. Mercury there is communications and writing. The sun is definitely leadership or entrepreneurial. And his sun is conjunct Uranus, which adds a flavor to his Scorpio sun. It gives a little Aquarian energy to it and makes him very unusual and unique, even genius, but very rebellious against the status quo. He's got to do things unique and march to the beat of his own drum. Mars is in the next house, but it's also holding hands with those planets in the second. And Mars is in Scorpio also? Yes. So he's got a Scorpio stellium, which is very intense and very transformative. Used from its highest place, it can be very healing, and he can act as a catalyst in other people's lives. Now, Chris, I hope you're listening, because when I was looking at your chart, I saw three different indicators that writing and communicating, maybe even teaching, would be good for you, be a good outlet for your talents. Okay, let's see who else we've got. North Node. Now, Ginger's North Node was in the sixth house, which is Virgo's home. The sixth house is about healing, about taking care of the body, and about diet, and about service to others. This is a very natural placement for a healer, very much. And so, in past lives, Ginger's south node would be in the 12th house, which is exactly opposite the sixth. In past lives, she was able to just kind of live a very unstructured life, many lifetimes spent possibly in monasteries, in churches, maybe even as a nun, very spiritual emphasis. And in these environments, one doesn't have to worry about the practical boring details of life. You're not having to worry about how you're going to get point A to point B on time. You're not having to worry about paying bills. Everything is just kind of fluid. Her whole emphasis was on divine and spiritual, the mass consciousness of connecting with the energy flow, connecting with a higher power. She was not concerned with material factors. In this lifetime, this North Node says, hey, if you, and I had a friend that had this same position, and it's a very gypsyish kind of mentality if you don't move into that North Node. Now, I know Ginger she's held down a home, a family, and a husband. She's maintained it all for many years. But this position gives her greatest accomplishment and sense of satisfaction with life when she is actively focusing on the body, on the routine of mundane life, and being very practical in her everyday affairs. Now, she's got a great deal of psychic sensitive energy about her from all those past lives. This stuff comes so easy to her. It's like breathing. So in this lifetime, the junk that we all have to deal with just to be in a human form, she has, you know, she has opportunities for growth there. Let's see. Okay, so Crystal. Now, this chart fascinated me when I was looking at it before we started today. Crystal is an incredibly adept, self-sufficient, powerful female. And it shows in her chart. She has got her north nodes in the fourth house, along with Neptune. And then she's got in the exact opposite house, the 10th house, she's got her moon, Saturn, and Mars. Okay? So with the north node in the fourth house is your home base, your family, behind the scenes things going on. You know, when you're in your house, that's your least public time. With the north node there, she's learning about emotions, family bonding, connections of an emotional nature, and also learning how to nurture and support others in their path. The south node is in her 10th house of career, which tells me in past lives, boy, she was a steamroller. She was very efficient in career, in the public eye, in leadership positions. That is, I mean, she has refined and honed those skills to the T. In this lifetime, her moon is there, which shows me where she's very sensitive and where she gets her emotional sustenance, and it's still, and that's career and her public persona. Saturn and Mars there also promise success in that area of life. Saturn falls in people's charts that often move to very high positions. Bill Clinton had Saturn in his 10th house. It can be a political house, but above all, it's your career and your public persona. Mars there, we talked about wherever Mars lands, shows where you're really pushing and driving. So she spends a tremendous amount of energy in her career. So you say, okay, Brenda, that seems very contradictory to what her soul's path is in this life. Why would she choose a chart that has all that emphasis in the 10th house when she's really supposed to be learning how to do the fourth house stuff? With this situation as it is, it will try to seduce her back into her south node of career emphasis to the exclusion of her more personal relationships. And so there is her learning curve in this lifetime, learning how to have a healthy balance between the nurturing emotional sides of life, that home base, as well as being able to be successful in the public arena of career, where you're not having to worry so much about emotions and feelings and all that. It's just, let's get the job done. This is what needs to happen. I can see it very clearly. Here, you do this, this, and this, and the job will get done. Okay, who else do we have here? Ooh, oh, Gagan has his north node in the 8th house, which is exactly opposite Chris's north node in the 2nd house. So these two are learning the exact opposite soul lessons. So Gagan has excelled in going it on his own, taking care of himself, paying his bills, making wealth, making, you know, building an empire. He's done all that. Now he's looking for someone to lighten the load, share the burden, and also share the resources. So in this lifetime, he's learning how to get out of his comfort zone and move into that dynamic, transformational Scorpio energy of life. And that's also doubled by him having Pluto in the first house. So he's really learning how to change and grow and welcome transformations and the cycles of life. So that's pretty cool. Let me see if I got anybody else. Okay, I think we covered that. Now let me take a breath here for a minute. Does anyone want to ask questions? If you do, call in 515-602-9648. Press 1 to let me know that you want to ask a question. Let's see. Now, I'm looking at my list of what I said we would cover today, and we've done a pretty darn good job so far. The health sensitivities I see down here. Every zodiac sign covers a different area of the body. And if you've ever looked at a farmer's almanac, they always have this picture of the body, and they have all these astrology signs showing you the different parts. So we look at several things in the astrology chart to see where this person's constitution is sensitive. We look at the sun sign. We look at the rising sign, the moon sign, and any planets in the first and sixth house. So let's just look at Gagan's here. We had Gagan and Ginger actually with Libra rising. Libra governs the kidneys. And think about this. The kidneys are in pairs, and Libra is concerned with relationships. We also had, Chris had we had two Virgo risings, I believe. Yes, Chris and Crystal. The Virgo, as I said right out of the gate, your digestive system, your small, your large intestines, your stomach is in there, but that's more of a Cancer sign. So the digestive system. When the nerves are shot, when you're worrying, and that's a common Virgo thing, it affects the digestive. The other two, Gagan and Ginger with the Libra, when relationships are out of whack, it goes right to the kidneys. Let's see. David with the Leo rising, that goes into the heart energy. We've got several Aries here, and the Aries has to do with your head. And I will say this to you, you Aries that are listening. Aries must have lots and lots of physical activity, including sex, to feel at their best. Because they have got so much energy that needs to be spent. A sedentary Aries is not good. What happens when an Aries doesn't burn up all that excess energy? They get mad. They blow up. They have a lot of outburst. And then they may have accidents. So if you're Aries, please do both of us a favor and start doing something every day physical. And another thing that Aries can do is work with metal and fire. This is good. Okay, we have the Pisces. That was Gagan. The Pisces energy has to do with our lymphatic system and our feet. So reflexology, lymphatic drainage, these are all helpful with the Pisces energy to keep things flowing. He had a sun and his moon in Pisces. The Sagittarius moon David has, Sagittarius has to do with the liver and the thighs, the hips. crystal had a Taurus sun and a Gemini moon. The Taurus is your throat, thyroid included. And the Gemini has to do with your arms and your lungs. Gemini always needs to learn a rhythmic pattern of breathing. That's very important. And then the Scorpio, Chris, the Scorpio energy has to do with elimination, both elimination systems, also the reproductive system. And you can look at the signs and their body, the corresponding body part, and you can really symbolically or metaphorically understand here. With the Scorpio, remember the phoenix we talked about, burning up in the ashes and being reborn new. The Scorpio's thing is having to constantly let go to be reborn again. The Aries is having to find challenges in life, things that keep them excited and passionate to be here. Pisces is learning to navigate the different energy flow, being able to live in two worlds at once, the spirit world as well as the material world. The Taurus is learning how to build and to express. Remember the throat, that's our throat chakra, that's the chimney to the heart. Learning how to speak their truth, honor their truth and their boundaries. The Virgo, discernment, analysis, being able to bring harmony out of chaos. Being able to fit all the pieces, the puzzle pieces together to work in a unified whole. All right. I think I've covered all of that. Now, on the love and the marriage, I know that's what a lot of you guys are probably interested in just by the amount of calls that I get on it. The seventh house on the chart is marriage. The fifth house is lovers and dating, the romantic courtship phase. So when you're trying to determine what someone's attracted to, if it's a man, you look at his Venus and you look at his moon as well as his fifth house and seventh house. With a woman, you look at her fifth and her seventh house. Some astrologers say look at her Mars and her sun. But I have not found that to be accurate. It's more about what's going on in that fifth and seventh house. Now, when we have, say, like we brought up David being married to a Sagittarius and his moon's in Sagittarius, the moon shows what you're comfortable, how you're comfortable in your daily routines and your home environment. And when you have a connection with someone's moon, it lets you know that you guys would be compatible not only emotionally, but also just living together. And, you know, a lot of people want to move their relationships to the next level, which is either living together or getting married. So it is important to know if you're compatible. There's another branch of astrology called synastry and composite charts. I do these also. The synastry, I prefer synastry over composite, but they're two totally different things. The synastry chart takes your chart and the person you're inquiring about, whether it be your mother, your daughter, your boss, your lover, whoever, and it compares the harmony between the two people. You can look at a synastry chart and determine if people have known each other before in past lives, if they're soulmates, they got karma to work off. It indicates their closeness. It indicates obstacles between them where they're really going to clash and butt heads. The composite chart is actually a new chart made of the combination between you and the other person. So if you've ever noticed people that get into a relationship and suddenly it seems like they're totally different people, when they come together, they create a third entity, so to speak, and it's that composite chart. And that chart is a combination of the other two charts, the other two natal charts. And it gives indication of what their purpose is, how people will view them as a couple, what they're here to accomplish, where they'll, I mean, and again, where they'll have obstacles, where they'll have strengths. We've got natal charts, we've got electional charts, we've got synastry, composite, we've got many different charts. And they all give different information. I want to say something that you will probably never read or hear anywhere else. It seems like I'm the only one that wants to point this out. When you read astrology predictions, say in the back of Cosmo, they've got your monthly horoscope, or you pick up your newspaper or whatever. You read it. I know a lot of people do. And you say, well, why didn't any of this happen? It never happens. These predictions are based on your natal astrology chart, not on your sun sign. So why would they do it anyway? I don't know why they keep printing them. I guess because they don't want to get that deep into it to explain to people that this is actually a prediction of your natal chart. I don't know. But when they make predictions, like you'll read, in June, Venus will be going through your 10th house. Your career is really going to expand at that time. Look for opportunities and promotions. Okay. Unless you, let's say you're reading about Virgo because your sun's in Virgo. Unless your rising sign is also Virgo, Venus is not going to be in your 10th house. And so on. So if you know your ascendant or rising sign, start looking up the predictions for that sign and quit looking under sun signs, because you're not going to find accuracy unless your sun and rising sign are the same. Okay? We got about 12 minutes left. If anybody wants to call in with a question, 515-602-9648. You can press 1 to let me know you have a question. Let's see, anything else we can talk about with this astrology? It's very fascinating, and, you know, I've been studying it my whole life, and I don't know everything, and I will never know everything. It's a lifetime study. You can go as deep as you want to go. As we talked about earlier, the cycles in astrology, there's a chart called your solar return that you can get calculated every year on your birthday, because believe it or not, every year on your birthday, everything is going to be different. And those charts will show themes that will pop up in your lifetime. Also, I want to briefly, oh, I see I have a question. Thank you for that. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? I have a question.
Hey. Sure.
The process of getting your chart rectified, could you explain that? Because I have all my information except for my time of birth, and I think that has always thrown my mm-hmm. Chart readings off.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have this question about my son's chart.
Okay. And thank you for calling and giving me a little bit of a breather. I was talking 90 minutes straight. I started coughing there a little bit. I was running out of gas. So thank you for that. What is your name?
My name is Jackie.
Okay, Jackie. Yes, there are some astrologers out there that actually will rectify a chart without a time. They have to be very specialized to do that. Mm-hmm. I had a client once that was born on Thanksgiving, but she mm-hmm. could not give me an exact time. And so we had about a 4-hour window because her mama said she could remember she had the baby and then wanted to get home and cook. I can't even imagine, but okay. And so with that 4 hours, the rising sign changes usually every hour. And so I was able to ask questions that had happened in her life to pinpoint it down to the hour that I felt was the one that fit, and it ended up being Libra rising. And then as I adjusted it within the hour, you know, it put certain planets in certain houses. If you've got a window, you've got a much better chance than just saying 12 hours, 24 hours, whatever. Okay. But yes, you are accurate. I feel sorry for people who don't have any indication of time, because it might just be because I'm an astrologer. That would drive me crazy forever not being able to know my sign. And it may be a good idea if you just read through the different rising signs and try to feel out what feels like you.
Right, because I get sometimes.
Go ahead.
I tend to have a lot of, when I look at pivotal times in my life where there were a lot of turmoils, it always involved family and family relationships. And mm-hmm. from my understanding, that's the fourth house.
Yes. Good job.
So in my mind, I'm always saying, well, if what sign actually rules the fourth house, shouldn't that be the sign that indicates my ascendant? If these are the issues that I'm facing all the time?
If you're facing a lot of...
I mean, they seem to be the only issues that really throw me off.
If you have... Well, I would approach that. Let me say this. We have less than 8 minutes left on the clock. If it were me, I'd take another approach. I would look for... probably Saturn, Pluto, Uranus, maybe Neptune falling in that fourth house and work your way back. Look where those planets are at. It'd be awesome if they were close together, but those mm-hmm. would be planets. Mars too may fall in that fourth house, but any of those planets cause changes and radical upheavals. So
well, I can tell
had,
you, every time Mars is approaching anything related to me, Mars and Neptune, I seem to always be going through a lot of grief.
And what do you mean approaching you? Getting close to your sun?
Like whenever
your moon?
I'm hearing that it's approaching certain houses, especially that house.
Okay. Well, you seem to have a lot of information that could probably pinpoint this chart. And it doesn't, the information you're giving me is much better than just a shot in the dark.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've, you know, I don't know if you've contacted a professional astrologer or not to see if anybody could pinpoint it. But the things you're saying, you're on top of your cycles. And so that should make it easier to determine.
Okay.
Have you ever been married?
Yes, I am married.
Okay. Marriage is another really big timing factor. We often have some pretty powerful aspects to the seventh house when we get married. So you might go back and look at where everything was at. Saturn and Jupiter both aspecting the seventh house ruler or moving through that house are mm-hmm. big significators in a chart. So you may look at those too. Another powerful placement to look at is your first house. When Saturn goes into that first house, that can be a real Saturn in the 12th and the first house can kind of wear you down. So you might look at those too. But I've noticed that the seventh house and marriage usually plays a pretty significant role. And what about your child's chart?
Well, he was born 5/8/1998 at 6 o'clock in the morning. And from my understanding,
have you ever had his chart done?
I've just done his chart online, and I've had someone
okay.
read his chart, and they said that he had like five planets in his 12th house. So he
okay.
supposedly has a lot of subconscious things that he has to work through. But I've noticed that anytime he's going through a lot of changes, by our relationship, I end up going through changes. So I'm just trying. I think if I know my chart and know his chart, then I probably could help him while I'm helping myself.
Well, in addition to subconscious, this guy has a he's got a lot of psychic perceptions about him. And dream work would be, I don't know how old you said his year, but I don't remember what you said, how old he is.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets a little bit older, you might start having him keep a dream journal because his dreams are very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They will give him a lot of guidance throughout his life. And with that said, if you would like to call me, that's fine, and maybe we can figure out, get your chart nailed down. We can certainly do that. But I'm going to go ahead and close this now because I've got 3 minutes left on the clock. And I
okay,
so thank you for asking.
That came in late.
Yes?
Could you repeat your contact information? I actually
came
in late. Oh,
I'm going to now, honey. I'm going to now.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Mysticalempress.com is our website, and the phone number is 720-965-0062, also 720-900-9727 to contact me. We have a Facebook page, Mystical Empress, Pinterest page, Instagram, lots of Google Plus pages. There's somewhere everywhere on the internet to locate us. But yes, astrology can be very detailed. You can learn more about yourself, I think, than just about anything else, because it breaks it down to the very minutest detail. And if you'd like to book a session to get your astrology chart analyzed, I'll be happy to work with you. But please make sure you have your time of birth, or like our caller, she had a lot of key incidences that had happened that she had been tracking time-wise that will help to narrow down a chart. I had a girl, a boyfriend, ordered a chart for a girl for Christmas, and it took her like 3 months to finally call me to get her chart done. And then after all that, she didn't have any clue what time her birthday was, so I wasn't able to do her chart. If I do a chart, I want it to be accurate. So if I don't think I can give you an accurate chart, I won't even commission you to do the job for you, because it needs to be accurate. There's so many things that come up that you want to pinpoint. You don't want it to be vague information. So with that said, I've thoroughly enjoyed our talk today. I hope you've learned some things about astrology that perhaps you didn't know before, and maybe this will inspire you to learn more about yourself. Because once you get that information, you really have a nice little treasure trove to work with in different areas of your life, and especially determining patterns that you've noticed repeat over and over. You can get a good grasp on that. Okay, winding down, website is mysticalempress.com, phone number 720-965-0062 or 720-900-9727. Check us out on Facebook or any of the other social media channels. I wish you guys a fabulous week, and definitely expect a miracle. They're always around just when you least expect them. Many blessings, mystical blessings to all of you. Thank you.